world famous in his field, Lubavitch got hold of him and his wife. Very moving story about Lavelville and Gail. So I just want to mention that he passed away very suddenly on his way to give a lecture. He was in Be'er Sheva and they rushed him to the hospital. It's about 2 weeks ago. And I want to dedicate what I have to say today in his memory. He was a very, very unique individual. This is the old time Balei Tshuva Chabad on the Anglo scene. And he was, you know, a rocket scientist. And the Rebbe and Velvel had a very special connection. He later came in Aliyah, lives in Be'er Sheva, part of his family Yisrael, part of his family Ashluchim, and it's really an amazing story. I remember reading to the class where he talks about his wife going back to Poland. And they were, you know, sort of Jewish consciousness, but not total commitment yet. And she said to her husband, and she had been raised totally reformed. He had been raised in a socialist Jewish environment, Shalom Aleichem concept. And his wife said, if we don't observe Judaism, who is left to observe it today? And that was the impetus of their total observance. How they first met the shaluach from Chabad, who made them from, is also a beautiful story. The shaluach wanted to do something in the community, and he asked if he could come visit Professor Green. And here you have Professor Green, world famous scientist, professor, and the shaluach is talking with him, in the middle of talk with him, he says, "Och, it's almost sunset, I have to daven mincha." And he says, "Pardon me," he goes into the corner, he davens mincha, and Professor Green describes, he didn't know you daven mincha, he didn't know what the hell the guy was doing, but the chutzpah, he says, "I'm a busy man, and he wants me to do him a favor, to lend my name to some communal event, and he's wasting my time by standing at the wall and talking to someone." And it's, I dedicate this shir in his memory. I apologize, but I love Balei Tshuva. You can't start to understand how much it means to me to see how the world has changed from the time I was growing up, what I described in Washington. We were one in a city, two in a state, and we were so lonely, and all we wanted to do was be B'nai Torah. And today, it's just a different world. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, there just were two very important conventions. There was the convention of the Shluchim and the convention of Agudat Yisrael. Due to the miracles of the internet, I attended both conventions. And I have to say, it's overwhelming to me to what I can sit in Jerusalem. The Gemara at the start of Pesachim talks about that a great Amora sits in Yerushalayim and he knows what's going on all over Babylonia. Remember the Gemara? I think it's said about Rabbi Yochanan, but you can check out the Gemara. Anyway, you sit in Yerushalayim and you're on the computer, you're there, and you make it the full screen. So I wanted to see what's going on, and I actually listened to two talks, something I rarely do because I'm always learning, writing, doing what I have to do, and the preparing lectures. But I actually listened to Chief Rabbi Zaks, the good Lord, at the Shluchim conference, and I listened to the keynote speaker Saturday night at the Agudat Yisrael conference, Rabbi Shimi Shera, Rabbi Shimon Shera, who's Rabbi Moshe Shera's only son. And I have to tell you, I read over the weekend, I got more papers than usual this weekend because I was in the Kupat Cholim on Friday, and in the main branch in Jerusalem, which is in a Haredi neighborhood, they give out free, all the freebies, all the Haredi papers. So I had Hamodia, Yetet Ne'eman, Hamavaser, let alone Hashavua. So, and I read the, you know, I saw the secular prayer, Yudiyat, Mariv, Makor Rishon. So I really read all the reviews of the conventions, the speeches. So I want to tell you, there was a movie in the 1990s, and it had to be a very good movie out of England, a movie that left you thinking, not a stupid movie. I think it was called Three Weddings and a Funeral. Do you recall that movie? So I want to tell you, comparing Chabad convention to Agudat Yisrael, I would say it was a wedding and a funeral. The contrast was so stark, so shocking. The Chabad event was totally upbeat, totally simcha, totally accomplishment, totally challenged to do more. Agudat Yisrael, I never heard so many complaints in my life. You might think Torah is gone, Torah is dead. Oh my gosh, one speaker after another, and some of these people I know well, I know them, and I couldn't believe it. Now, I just want to relate to, and everyone carried on, and with the internet, it's the greatest threat to Torah. I don't know, cause I'm going to start a campaign. Daniel, are you with me? I want to outlaw cars as a vehicle of transportation. Hundreds of thousands of people have been killed by automobiles. Do you know how many rabbis in Israel, how many rebbeim? You have no idea. I've been in here since 69. You have no idea the tragedies would cause. Rav Kook of Rehovot with his children, tell them what that meant. The Sachtshava Rebbe, early 70s, coming out of Tel HaShomer, visited someone. The whole Sachtshava dynasty was wiped out. I mean, you can go on and on with cars. Well, how did Rabbi Pinchas die? Also a car crash. Well, you can go on and on. Let's outlaw cars. Why are you guys looking at me so quizzically? I make sense.
You were killed by horses.
Sakonet nefasha. Horses, at least blame the horses. Cars, you blame the humans. Gentlemen, the internet is here to stay. It's changed the world. It's changed everything. It's only going to get better, and it's only going to be more polished and more capable. The internet is here to stay. All right, there are problems with it. First of all, I don't agree with censorship. I grew up with the Rav. We have to teach a kid. There's good and there's bad in life. But you can find a solution in Israel. I mean, those who want a solution, my grandchildren, I don't know how many of my families have it, Rimon, they tell me there's solutions. You can filter out or write the pornography, fine, good. But to rant and rave against the internet, but that's just a general comment. To be more specific, I heard Reb Shimi Scherer, wonderful speaker. But wow, everyone is an enemy of Torah. Do you know who was the first person he attacked? Reb Nosson Slifkin. Ribbono Shel Olam, I know Rabbi Slifkin. All right, he's a zoologist, he's a biologist. This is the biggest enemy we have today. You know what I'm talking about, right? So he wrote, so Chazal, Ribbono Shel Olam, when we go to a doctor today, do we take the Gemara out and use the cures mentioned in the Gemara? Or do we use medicine? I mean, how much has been written on this? It's Zil Kri Berafu. Rav Avram Ben Arambam said it already 700 years ago. The Gemara's medicines were fabulous at that time, but today, Baruch Hashem, we're more advanced. So he knows more about biology and zoology and anatomy of animals and whatever. We're going to start battles over Darwin again. You know how much was written Darwin? Can we believe in Darwin? Can't we believe in Darwin? Were there dinosaurs? Weren't there dinosaurs? Ribbono Shel Olam, these are such minor matters. Then, of course, he bunches everything together. And he attacks Rabbi Adlerstein. You have to know what's going on in the blogs. Rabbi Adlerstein is already right of center. It's Rabbi Willicks Mechutin. I know Rabbi Adlerstein. And then, of course, centrist and YU and Riverdale, everyone is in the same camp. Ribbono Shel Olam, I may be a centrist, I may be YU. I'm certainly not Riverdale in the term that he's using it. And it hurts me, you know, to apostle anything, but at a certain point you have to say, this is conservative Judaism. It hurts me. I don't want to apostle out a Jew who shame the Shabbos. If I possibly cannot apostle him, I'm very happy. But the talk was unbelievable. But he said something, and here we come to the key. And here you come to everything I spoke about when I spoke about Agudat Yisrael, but I didn't delineate it. After the talk at the Agudat Convention, I just want to delineate something. And it's amazing. When Rav Shach, and you understand, I spoke yesterday, Rav Shach, the question from Chabad, a very sharp question thrown my way. And when Rav Shach, in 1980, the result of Rav Shach was Agudah split into three. Agudat Yisrael, Degel HaTorah, Shas. So people went to Rav Shach and complained, Rebbe, what you did, you destroyed what the Chofetz Chaim built. So Rav Shach answered, if I can't run an Agudat Yisrael the way it was run at the time of the Chofetz Chaim, I have to destroy it, I have to split it. That was his answer. Shimi Sherry gets all carried away, and he tells a story that his father told him, that there was a critique of Agudat Yisrael, this has to be in the 1950s, and the person writing was, you know, a right winger, and he wrote, this is not the Agudat, what Agudat Yisrael is doing today, this is not the Agudat Yisrael of Rav Chaim Isaac Brzezinski. And his father went to visit Rav Aaron Cutler. It was Saturday night, I believe, in Borough Park. Rav Aaron stayed that Shabbos in Borough Park. I told you, Rav Aaron, I think it was one out of three Shabbatot, he came to the yeshiva, but the other two, he stayed in Borough Park. If I'm wrong, so it's one in one, but I think it was one out of three. Well, it depended upon the flow of work and what had to be done. So he goes to Rav Aaron and he reads the editorial or the article to Rav Aaron, and Rav Aaron bangs on the table. This is the Zelba Agudat Yisrael. This is Geben and Tzeit from Chofetz Chaim. It's the same Agudat Yisrael that existed at the time of the Chofetz Chaim, Rav Chaim Isaac Brzezinski. You can't say it's a different Agudat today. And Shimi Scherer says, it's 100 years, they're celebrating 100 years. I go to Israel, the Cannabis Conference, the original conference that I told you about, 1912, 100 years, or 1911, whatever. And the preparations for 1911, I think it actually took place 1912, but you can check it out. And we have to have the same Agudat Yisrael that Rav Chaim Moisek had, Chas v'chalila, we should make any changes, any innovations, etc. And gentlemen, this is exactly the touchstone of where we differ. It's 100 years later. We've gone through a Holocaust. 6 million Jews were butchered. The lives of another 5 million were deformed. I met a doctor in the hospital who knew me from the Shtiblach. He's Dafkin, my mother's where my mother is in the geriatrics department, and lovely, lovely, lovely man. My daughter tells me he's helped her with testimony in court cases she had. And a lovely man, a real Ben Torah, father of six children, a real, what we can really be proud of. Next to being a Rebbe, a doctor comes next because he does chesed. It's gemilat chesed. He says every day, he says he never regrets. He doesn't know why he became a doctor, he told me. He told me he learned in Merkaz Harav, then he did army, and then he's decided to go to medical school. And he says every day he does something good, he feels good, he helps someone. Beautiful words. So he said to me, he's Hungarian. So there was a memorial for Hungarian Jewry. There's one day that they hold a memorial because at that day the deportations began. And he was asked to speak a few years ago. So he got up and said, my parents are not Nitzolei HaShoah. My parents suffered from the Holocaust Kol Yemei Chayehem. He described at the Eichmann trial how they were decimated. Only with the Demyanuk trial could they sort of start to make their peace and talk about it. He said, we, the second generation, are Nitzolei HaShoah. It's a fabulous part. I have to say, it corresponds to what I said at the Great Synagogue at the book launch, but it says it even better than I said it. He hit words that clarify it beautifully. 6 million killed. 5-6 million. All of us. I know my life. I say it in my book. The best people we could send to Russia were second generation. Their dedication. My own answer, yes, sir. My wife. We were American kids. We saw all the DPs after the war. We saw. I remember my father having a discussion with me in 44. Nothing we could do. Nothing we could do. So much has changed. There's now more anti-Semitism in the world than there was before Hitler, before World War II. You just think for a minute, Hitler was commanding and talking and raving and ranting, not anywhere else in Europe. Europe? Who would believe in Norway? They threw oranges and grapefruits imported from Israel with the Jaffa label on them. They threw the crates off the boat into the water last year. Norway. More anti-Semitism beyond words. England. What one of the ministers in England just said last week. The state of Israel. Not in that. You have more Jews living in the state of Israel than the entire population of Jews in the entire diaspora. And if you go with halachic standards, you probably have twice as many Jews, halachically Jewish, living in Israel than all the Jews in the world. When you say there are 5 million Jews in America, who are you fooling? They run around the conference of the Reform and they showed them singing. There was one Jewish face in the choir, 100 people singing. All right, we have problems, you have to be makar of them. But wow, has the world changed. Not only that, we have an army. You know what it means to have Tzva Haganah LiYisrael? An army where they're ranting and raving now about women singing? I mean, you just think where we're at. The same week that the issue of women singing in the army, by the way, that's one of the reasons David Hartner said he wants to commit suicide. That became, did you see the Yud Friday? Could you believe your eyes? Oh my gosh. David Hartman, he was always a sensationalist. In other words, he would always make statements like, read Washington. Look what I quote in 1953. I still can see it in front of my eyes. That was David Hartman. I learned very early in life, if you're a Rebbe, don't make a shocking statement unless you can back it up. If you can't back it up, keep your mouth shut, because students take you seriously and you don't want to raise nitwits. You want to raise responsible thinking people. So if I shout and scream, but you notice I can back it up. That's one of the reasons he gives for wanting to commit suicide. The same week that exploded in the army, tell me, what else did the army announce? All the kitchens are going glatt kosher. Understand? I can tell you why. I know why. Do you know why? Have you been in the army, Daniel? You know how the army works? I happen to know. I have a chassid who dealt with the army with a bid, with a very serious bid to supply food. So the army sends out tenders. When the army sends out a tender, millions, in other words, they want 10 million cans of baked beans. You follow? So you have to show how you can get it to them, and there's a whole list you have to answer, including who the kashrut is, and the army has to approve the kashrut. So obviously it reached the point in the army where to buy regular meat and glatt kosher meat, it already becomes cheaper if you say we need 100,000 tons of glatt kosher meat. At what price? Beis Yosef for the Sfartim, and the Ashkenazim can eat it too. And it becomes cheaper for the army than dividing it up, if you follow me. So, with all due respect to Reb Chaim Eisen, no one loves or respects Reb Chaim Eisen more than yours truly. My monograph from Reb Chaim Eisen that appears in Rakafet Aron, time and again I give permission to people to reprint it. But it's 100 years later. What are you relating to? Grow up. Relate to today. Reach out. Be positive. Give us a message that we can march with. Seek the reality. Sovereignty in the state of Israel. Who has it? Couldn't be before Mashiach. You're part of it. You're sitting in the government. You're ministers, half ministers. Call it what you wish. Do a little soul searching within. What are you attacking Rabbi Slifkin for? What are you attacking YU for? What are you attacking? Bamishpacha was attacked. I couldn't believe. I kept the list as he was speaking. And he's a good speaker. Okay, so I have to tell you, it was a funeral and a wedding last week. And believe me, I would much rather dance at a wedding than mourn at a funeral. And the Shluchim Conference, it warmed my heart. Wow, what energy, what positivism. Is everyone at Tzaddik? Of course not, I'm not an idiot. I always say Chabad is like YU. YU, if you know YU graduates, they range all the way. It's like a supermarket. You go into a supermarket in America, it's not Israel. Israel, all the supermarkets, every product they carry has to be kosher. There are reasons why. Super sold by charter, and the co-op by charter, and Hashikmar is owned by Shomer Shabbos people, Tzaddikim, Osherat is Tzaddikim. Everything there is a glad heksha. Shikma has branches, some with glad, some with regular heksherim, but today you can't find a regular heksha. It doesn't pay money-wise. Anyone who's going to make a kosher product. I just got the licorice imported from China. 3 heksherim on the licorice. OU, Beit Yosef, and Ishur Rabbanut Rashid. 3 heksherim out of China on a box of licorice. So, because everyone's exotic. Why you? You have a wide range. There's just a terrible scandal. The guys last year from the Kollel Elyon, the best Kollel in YU, a rabbi, he's in a conservative synagogue, he's involved in a nasty divorce, and his wife, I don't want to repeat, you all saw it in every newspaper, every rag, and the guys in the Kollel were flabbergasted. They knew him. No. Jews have sinned for Yetzaleva Dom Ramanu Rab. They just arrested his wife, by the way, his ex-wife in Florida, for posing as a psychologist. If you, I mean, it's beyond, I'm going to parcel out why you say, all right, you have one Chabadnik here, there, they're all different. And I go to Israel, you don't have people sitting in federal penitentiary today? I can give you names of people sitting in federal penitentiary today. Can give you names and stories. But I'm not going to pass a Lagurit Yisrael because of one Meshumet. Ribbono Shel Olam, that's all you have to worry about. Chabad was a wedding. And boy, I love to dance at a wedding. Okay, that's just a follow-up to Rav Shach. And those that feel I'm a total devotee of Rav Shach now will understand that times I can be critical to me and Ochi, but still it hurts. The Agudat Yisrael split into 3. The Halavai Rav Chaim Moshe would be alive today. But it's 100 years later. Time does not stand still. And this, of course, is why Rav Shach attacked the Rav. The Rav's drasha and Yosef V'Echav, if the Rav is right, then Agudat Yisrael is finished. You understand? So on that level, learning, what's the pshat in the Rambam? No one is finished if it's like the Rambam or the Ravid or like the Shach or the Taz. But if the Rav is right and Yosef V'Echav, oh boy, does Agudat Yisrael have problems. And I got to give Rav Shach credit. He found the one place in the Rav's writings where he understood this I have to come out against. But okay, to me, where we're sitting, what we're doing, where we're at, my own life story, when I put on the uniform of Tzva Hagana Yisrael, the first Rothkopf after 2,000 years of exile, I never dreamt I would have so many sons-in-law, grandchildren, nephews. Now Rothkopf's probably on to 40 have served in the IDF or are serving on the IDF. I was the first one. I made a Shechiyonu. And the poor little chayalit who gave me the uniform, she thought, no, a moron, he's making a Shechiyonu. What's this? He's lighting candles for Yontif, for Yom Kippur? Okay, but that's my critique. And you may very well quote me a wedding and a funeral. Michael, back to the Satma. By the way, in that letter I gave Yitz Rubin, this Lubavitcher rabbi, compliments me that I could give a lecture on the Sakma so subjectively that the Smakma go and publicize that I became a Sakma Chassid. You know, it was always at last year. So now back to Sakma. As I said to you, following the Six-Day War, you have no idea the impact it had. I don't have to go any further than Nomi Shema, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, I quote, "If the Hit'orot would have continued another few weeks, Mashiach would have been here." And I don't want to tell you what the Tefet says on that, but I say, had the Rebbe only come in Aliyah, oh, what could have happened in the state of Israel? Wow. Okay. I may be wrong, I may be right, but when Satmar Hasidim started raising money for the United Jewish Appeal, when Satmar Hasidim started becoming Lubavitchers, and as I told you, they interviewed some of them and they said, in Satmar, all we heard was negativisms. In Lubavitch, we hear positivisms. The Rebbe came out, the first volume on the Six-Day War. I have the volume in my library at home, but this is Xerox. Al HaGula V'al HaTemura was the first volume, 1967. And here he develops the theme, what I call Satanology. And we spoke last week, we ended off the class last week, and I want to tell you that if you didn't believe me, that maybe I made this up, and you know, I wrote this out, so you should know that one of our students, Danny Wolf, told me he was learning with a Satma, and this is what they were learning, exactly what I spoke about in class, that the Satma says you're not allowed to go to the Kotel. And he attacks the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe set up tefillin stands at the Kotel. Remember, this put Lubavitcher on the map, because you don't realize Lubavitcher was a small Hasidus in Crown Heights. And Crown Heights was then the center of the Jewish world. Rabbi Kanatopsky, the young Israel. You've heard the name Rabbi Harold, the Rabbi Tzvi Kanatopsky. Arguably, he was the Rebbe's top Talmud out of the 1940s. I yet knew Rabbi Kanatopsky very well. I mean, this was what Y.U. was all about, a Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shamayim, a wonderful speaker, a general knowledge, a baseball, a fan. You know, it was Y.U., and Y.U. of that period, perhaps Y.U. of today, I don't know. But out of the 40s, arguably, everyone asked me who was the best Talmud. Out of the 50s, it's not a problem, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. The 60s, I always say Reb Heschel Shechter, arguably. Out of the 70s, I say my Talmud, Rabbi Chaim Milson, arguably. Rabbi Kanatopsky, arguably, but, you know, he was in learning, he was a Rosh Yeshiva, he was in BTA, he was a wonderful Rebbe. So, it was Rabbi Kanatopsky, Rabbi Baumel, that's Rabbi Lamb's uncle, was another caught between two worlds, a Hungarish Rav and a modern Orthodox rabbi at the same time. And then if you ask your grandparents, some of you must have grandparents who grew up or lived in Crown Heights. And yeah, the little shtibble, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was there, there were other rebbeim there, but 67 put the Rebbe on the map. And you all know, I don't want to repeat what I said when I quoted what's written here, it's very hard for me to quote it, that the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, thinks he did a big mitzvah, Moshe, by wrapping up tefillin on at the Kotel, and in reality, it's the biggest sin in the world, because all these secular Zionists think about is raping women, seducing women. Okay. I don't know. I'm a man. I admit at times over my life I also had sexual desire. Maybe I still have. I hope I have a little sexual desire left me. It's a go up in Gemara, you know, with Rav. If you don't know the Gemara, I don't want to repeat it to you. It's a Gemara, Rav Kahana. You know what I'm talking about? So, but Ribbono Shel Olam, we're normal people. When I'm putting on tefillin, all I think is seducing women. Ribbono Shel Olam, how do you write this? How do you think this? And these are people at the Kotel. I told you my uncle put on tefillin twice in his life, my mother's brother, Zichrono Livracha, twice in his life. Once at his bar mitzvah, I think he told me he put on. And my grandfather learned in the Lashon. Listen to what we're talking about, what America did to that part of the family. And then he put again at the Kotel, and he was so proud. Whenever he goes to the Kotel, he puts on tefillin. He was so proud, you have no idea. No, I guarantee you he wasn't thinking about raping or seducing women when he was putting on tefillin at the Kotel. Chas v'chalila. And then with the Balei Tshuva, so people told the Rebbe that a lot of Balei Tshuva came out of it. And the Rebbe says, these aren't Balei Tshuva, it's like Shabtai Tzvi. These are people who started becoming observant because Shabtai Tzvi, false Messiah, look what happened to them. And Ribbono Shel Olam, that is his comparison. And then he raises the issue, are you allowed to go to the Kotel? And we're going to go into that now. So he quotes a tshuva. You can get all the sources in Aligula Valatmura. But he quotes a tshuva out of Amsterdam that when Shabtai Tzvi announced he's Mashiach. And again, I gave lectures many years ago on Shabtai Tzvi, History of Torah, Modern Times. It's not so, you know, everyone dismisses Shabtai Tzvi as a false Messiah. But you have to understand, it was a very traumatic moment. The Jews had suffered terribly, the Khmelnytsky massacres, over 100,000 Jews butchered, Gezeirat Tach Betach, 1648, 1649. I recommend, if you can get hold of Shalom Ash's book, Kiddush Hashem, if you can read that, you'll understand what a traumatic, it's a very powerful volume. What do you write it? It's originally in Yiddish. It's the English one is a translation. I read it in English. I read Yiddish, but I read it very slowly.
I think it was a JPS book.
Yeah. It was a very powerful volume. I remember the impact that had upon me. I've quoted it in class. The ending is very powerful when he returns to the fair, and after all the Jews have been wiped out and they're starting life up again, and he comes into this store and everyone is trying to sell something to make a few ruble, and he sees this bearded Jew, and you know, he can see a religious Jew, and there's nothing in the store that he's selling. And he says to him, what do you sell? There's nothing here. And he says, I sell faith, I sell emunah. Such a powerful ending to that book. That, and I've said many times that if, you know, people came out of the Holocaust and threw away religion, you can't argue with them. But you have to say in a nice way, and they say it later, in that documentary on Borough Park, Mr. Katz says, it's a Zichrono Livracha. He says it so beautifully. My wife said to me, we don't raise our children to be good Jews. We've given Hitler another victory. Women have bina yetera. And I said that after the tragedy of my hesped on David and Nava, Shem Yikom Damam. So I ended off the hesped. So Rosh Yeshiva and Munsey raised the issue, stupid, my faith is shaken, like Hartman. No, that's the question you're asking. Two people killed by Arab terrorists and 6 million killed by Hitler, that doesn't bother you? Your faith is shaken? But I said, yeah, all of us, part of being a religious person, part of being a Jew, at times we have to deal with crisis. The Rav said this time and again, Akedat Yitzchak, to the Rav was the basic pasher in the Torah. David Hartman disagrees with the Rav. Read his latest writings, you'll see. All right, I go on the Rav, not David Hartman. I ended off that if we lose our commitment, we've given the Arab terrorist another victory. You should know from that hesped, I picked up, for the sake of charity, endless hundreds of dollars. Someone was listening who was second generation, and he was so moved by those words. I tied in with Reb Lazer Silver, what I write about in the Silver Year after World War II, the DP camps. And Baruch Hashem, he gave, this tzaddik gave endless money anonymously to victims of Arab terror. My daughter handled it, families that she knew that needed special help. So after the Khmelnytsky massacres, Shabtai Tzvi comes along, and he says, I'm Mashiach, I'm redeeming you. And people were hungry for the message, you understand? And he made innovations. One of the innovations he made was that Birchat Kohanim every Shabbos. Now, this morning I had Birchat Kohanim in my shul. Why don't we do Birchat Kohanim every day? In America, you do Birchat Kohanim how many times a year? Three festivals, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, that's it, am I right? You don't do Birchat Kohanim? Why don't you do Birchat Kohanim every day? Why don't you do Shabbos at least? All right, the Sfadim do every day. But we have Tshuvot. In order to do Birchat Kohanim, you have to be Besimcha. L'vorech et amo Yisrael bi'ahava. In the Golus, we're not Besimcha, we're not bi'ahava, we're suffering. Even on Shabbos, we're suffering. We don't do Birchat Kohanim. But when Yontif comes along, so Yontif is Samachta b'chagecha v'ayitach sameach, we do Birchat Kohanim. How many of you have Kohanim? How many of you are Kohanim here? No, am I right or wrong? All right. So Shabtai Tzvi said, since he's revealing himself and since he's Mashiach, we have to be Besimcha at least on Shabbos. And he ordered that even the Ashkenazic shuls, they have to do Birchat Kohanim on Shabbos. So the question came up, do we do Birchat Kohanim on Shabbos? And he brings down from this posek in Amsterdam, the old Yaakov, Chas v'chalila, it's a false movement, it's Shabtai Tzvi, we can't make any innovations, we can't make any changes, and the same way they refuse to change, we too, Chas v'chalila, should we go to the Kotel? The Kotel was conquered by hands of Rishoyim, hands of Apikarsim, hands of people that don't believe. And Chas v'chalila, we should benefit from Ma'aseh Satan. We are being challenged by Satan. Do we believe in tradition? Do we believe in Torah? Or do we bow before the Zionist idol? And he goes further. And here's his description of what goes on at the Kotel. That, what is the Kotel? A place kenufiyala pritzut. How can you go to such a place? Now, what is he talking about? I've been at the Kotel every Friday night since 1969, except when I'm not in the country, I can count on the fingers of one hand the times I didn't get to the Kotel, simply it was raining or snowing, you know, so hard that even with rain gear, I couldn't make it. But I mean, for instance, since I came back from America in August, I haven't missed a Friday night at the Kotel, including a few weeks ago. It was raining, but Baruch Hashem, we managed. What's he talking about? First of all, at the Kotel, you have, it's a shul, there's a mechitza. I attribute that mechitza to Chabad, because when the Kotel was liberated, the religious population in Israel was not that strong. And people were yelling, it's an archaeological place, there shouldn't be a mechitza, there shouldn't be separation. But once Chabad started putting tefillin on people, everyone was coming to daven at the Kotel. And even the old Mapainiks, but they still had a taste of Yiddishkeit in them that they saw in their parents' house. We're talking 1967, right? So we have a mechitza. Then you have the area beyond. So of course, tremendous crowds come. At times there are men and women there. You don't have total separation. But to say that there's pritzut there, Chas v'chalila. You have to look at the crowd and view it positively. Ashrei ayin ra'at hazot. Thank God that people come Friday night to the Kotel. And Yeshua's morning, they, you know, when they expect tremendous crowds, Birchat Kohanim, they put up a mechitza beyond the Kotel, in the plaza. But look, we have a shrine. We have a Beis HaMikdash. Makom HaMikdash, I should say. How many people, I know people, I mean, this is not stories I have to read about in newspapers or in fundraising magazines. I know people, I have Talmidim listening right now. Listening right now, I send regards to them. I know people, they told me their story. They had kids, they went around the world after college, they wound up in Israel, they were in Spain, they were in France, they were in Portugal, they were in Greece, why not go to Israel? And someone tapped them on the shoulder at the Kotel. Are you Jewish? Yes. Reformed Jew. Jewish, yes. You want to learn a little bit? Look, come to the yeshiva for 2 weeks. Room and board on the house. No obligation. Why not? No. He went. The most famous story, and one of the young men from this family was in class and told the story right here. He went, his parents, Reformed Jews, real Reformed Jews, Germans. No, his mother's home is not kosher until today. I mean, all her children are from, all her grandchildren are from. Great-grandchildren already. So they sent the brother. What happened to your brother? Get him out of there. The brother comes, second guy learning. They sent the third brother. Get him out of there. The youngest child was a girl. She came. Get them out of there. All from, some live here, some live in America. Most are right wing. When my book came out, so I had a mock-up. We didn't have the real book yet, so I wanted him. I said, show it to your rabbi. I said, oh, I can't show it to my rabbi. They are good at convention. Centrist, Mishpacha, Slifkin, Andlistin, Riverdale, everything in the same boat. Oh, my gosh. Positivism. You're sitting here, Matan. A smile on your face. Baruch Hashem, you're here. The Millers, I know where they come from. I yet saw the original mikveh in South Philly. My wife used it. You know the Gemara with Rabbi Yochanan sitting outside of the mikveh, that when the women come out, they should see him, be like him? You know what South Philly was like? It was groups of Afro-Americans sitting and playing cards and dice, and you had to walk past them. It was a zoo. And that's what you saw when you went into the mikveh, when you came out of the mikveh. So now you understand why Philadelphia turned out the way it did at that time. Today already, Philadelphia is a near Ve'en B'Yisrael, but it never achieved Chicago or Los Angeles for that matter. But he describes here the Kotel, and Apikosim come to the Kotel. So what's wrong if Apikosim come to the Kotel? Didn't Goyim come to the Beis HaMikdash? Didn't we accept Kabbalah? Maybe if we have a little bit influence, we'll be able to turn these people around. But not only that, and then he writes. I mean, I don't know how a person can write this without checking. You follow me, Michael? You write something, check it out. Back up what you wrote. Ushmu shemanu shekvar mitkonenim biyazutamu mardam lachpon chafirot tachat hakotel hama'aravi ulemashma ozen davan nafshenu shelo haya kizot mimot olam ומי איק הייתה ישראל לגוי, וכל הפיקוסים והכופרים שבכל הדברות לא הרחירו עוז בנפשם לעשות מרידה כזו בבורי עולם ובבית הקודש אשר איבה למושב לו. He says, שמוע שמענו, I love his Hebrew, he writes Hebrew beautifully. שמוע שמענו, we heard rumors that the archaeologists are going to dig under the kulpel. Ribbono shel Olam, the archaeologists have dug, not under the kulpel, they dug. You know what the underground, what they revealed. It's beautiful, it's magnificent. You have to sign up to get a tour. At times they have so many people want tours, you can't even sign up. And that's, this is the greatest gift to the Jewish people. It proves we were here at the dawn of history. It proves Yerushalayim is ours. It proves this is the Makam HaMikdash. And he views it that they're digging to destroy the Kotel. And from time immemorial, the greatest Apikorsim never dreamt of doing such a thing. What are you, crazy, to destroy the Kotel? The Kotel brings in hundreds of millions of dollars to Israel, probably billions of dollars a year in tourism. Every guy comes to the Kotel. I've seen cardinals at the Kotel. With what do they wear? They wear a red hat. Cardinals at the Kotel. I remember Dr. Belkin, it's the famous story with Cardinal Spellman, that they were once honoring Cardinal Spellman, and the Jews had to turn out to honor him. He was the Cardinal of New York, Francis Cardinal Spellman. He was an no habeas rebel. Was very, at that time, the Jews and the Catholics owned New York. And Dr. Belkin got up to speak. And Dr. Belkin turns to the Cardinal, he says, you know, in his broken English, Cardinal, he says, there's one big difference between us. Your head covering is red and your institutions are in the black. My head covering is black, but my institutions are in the red. That was with Shmuel Belkin, and you know, the place cracked up. But well, imagine Cardinals come. You can come any Friday night to the Kotel. Koreans, Chinese, Japanese. I've met Germans walking to the Kotel. And I have a big problem. You know, I have to be honest. I'm schizophrenic. I don't know. Sometimes I just want to get on a plane and drop 50 atom bombs over Germany. And then I say to myself a moment later, what do you accomplish? These people may be different. Maybe they regret what their grandparents did. You have to be nice. And I'm always nice to them. The good side wins out against the evil inclination. But you have to have that feeling. Revenge is a healthy Torah Jewish feeling. Kel nekomat Hashem. We gave, as the Rav says in Kol Dodi Dofek, we gave the other cheek too many times already. So I'll meet these Germans, I walk with them, I speak with them, and I'm always overwhelmed by them. They'll tell me they've come to do an expiation for their people. They're here for a year, they work in a hospital, they do charity work, they work in kibbutzim. And who knows, some of them, you ask me how you expiate your sins, if they'll ask me, I'll tell them. I hate to say what I'll say. You have to convert to Torah, to Judaism. You have to have Jewish children and raise them al admat hakodesh l'kadesh shem shemayim b'chayehem u'miyuseihem, and the way they think and live. And I know Germans who married Jews, know them in Yerushalayim, know them in Bnei Brak. That's expiation. They've given the Jewish people tens and tens and tens of descendants today, Hochim b'derech haTorah mitzvot, and
you said that is an acceptable reason for conversion.
Absolutely,
they see themselves as doing tshuva.
Absolutely, absolutely. If they're willing to accept Ribbono shel Olam, give up Jesus, and to do tshuva, lekabel aleihem ol Torah mitzvot, what can be better than that? And I know these people are from 100%. I happen to be related to one. It's my wife's sister-in-law, her brother's sister-in-law. No, it's her brother's sister-in-law who married a German. He writes for the German newspapers. The kids were all raised in Bnei Brak. You can't believe what fine children. Kanein Hara. The greatest revenge. Excuse me?
You think the Haredi Rabbanim would accept that?
I wouldn't believe the Haredim will accept that. I can't believe the Haredim... Here, this is really a conversion l'shem shemayim. Say, I believe so. I know that he was accepted by the Haredim, but so I would imagine. And here he goes on, and he quotes the pasuk. This is my wife. My wife is a kahanik. She's a kahanik. So she is furious at any Jew who doesn't live here. Okay? I have to apologize. That's the way my wife thinks. I'm more liberal. I only agree with her 80%. So, but she gets very upset. Russia, Pesach and Sukkot, all the people come and they take the hotels and their apartments, and then they run back to the five towns, to Beverly Hills, to Teaneck. My wife gets very upset, and she quotes what the Satmar Rebbe is quoting. The Satmar Rebbe says, "I have another reason why you can't go to the Kotel. Yishayo Hanavi." Ki tabol erot panai mi bikesh zolt mi yabchem ramos chatzeway. And Rashi explains there that their lave is not shalem. They're phonies. They're coming to the kotel. They're not religious. They're Zionists. They're Mizrachistim. They're centrists. They're Slifkins. They read b'mishpacha. The lave is not shalem. Mi bikesh zolt mi yabchem. Wow, that's what my wife says. You know, maybe guys help me, Kim. She gets all upset. I tell her.
Where is the source?
This is Yishayahu Aleph. It's in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Bet, but it's Kuf Mem Zayin. This is in the Alagul Aleph Murat. It's Kuf Mem Zayin. I'm going, not page by page, but just the general feeling. And he goes on, and he says, all this has come about because the Zionist has built a state, and by building a state, they have empowered the Satan, and they're arrogant, and they're boastful, and they throw dirt in the eyes of the nations of the world, and they think they're indestructible, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries that this is what's happened to the Jewish people. And therefore, how can you go to the Kotel if the Kotel is the symbol of Zionism, of the Israeli army, of the Pritzut that goes on? How can you go to the Kotel? Keep away. Mi bikesh zot minchem. Lir Mos Chatzerai.
Because he realizes the lie in what he's saying. Because if he would say Dizengoff is the symbol of the Zionist endeavor, okay. If he would say that Tel Aviv is the symbol, but he's saying a religious place, the Kotel is the symbol of the Zionist endeavor. That's a compliment.
But to say that to your way of thinking, but to his way of thinking, the Six-Day War, the Kotel, Satmar guys ran to Chabad as a result. This Kotel is testing us. Do we bow before the idol?
For those who are listening to your tape, that a psychological study should be made of this particular rabbi.
Someone told me after they heard what you said that there is some psychological work. If anyone is listening, let us know where it's been written. But I'll tell you, this is Rakefet's take on it. You don't have to be a big genius. I've said this before and I say it again, and life has taught me this. In life, none of us want to be in debt to someone else. It's a terrible feeling. You know, there's a halacha that if I lend Moshe Rapp's money, I'm not allowed to walk by and make him feel bad. You follow me? He has to come to me to pay me back. I can't go and show my nose and let you feel, oh, there's the guy who lent me money. It's a terrible feeling. So what is life based upon? Life is based upon a principle of Goimlin. What does Goimlin mean? That none of us are a Robinson Crusoe. By the way, the Rav gave a whole talk whether Robinson Crusoe is a Jewish ideal or isn't it a Jewish ideal. You know, the Rav, remember that talk? A fabulous talk in the mid-70s to the social workers, where he developed the idea that Robinson Crusoe is not the ultimate Jewish ideal, because a Jew lives as a yachid and as a member of a community. Robinson Crusoe lived as an individual and not as a member of a community. And that is not the Jewish ideal. But be it as it may, what's our concept? Gomlin. We're part of a community. None of us can do it alone. So today I do you a favor. Tomorrow you do me a favor. This is what Gomlin is all about. And that way we're not in debt to each other, because we all need each other. I'm a Rebbe, I'm a Malamed, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're a dentist, you're an optician, you're a builder, you work in the food industry, and we all benefit. It's Gomlin. It's one interconnected circle. But in time, someone does you a favor that you can never repay. When someone does you a favor that you can never repay, the psychologists say, and I'll illustrate it in a minute, one of two things happen. Either you hate each other, or you love each other all the more. Why should you hate each other? Because psychologically you feel bad. I can't repay that person. And I know a story, a live story. Three girls graduated Stern College. This is in the early years, 1950s. Two girls got married. One girl didn't get married. All three came in Aliyah. One of the girls who was married with four little children, Lo Aleinu, died of cancer. The other married girl made a shidduch between the widower and the girl who had